Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies, and I have an incredible guest today, someone that I met from a distance at a conference in Texas about a year ago, but have been avidly following on social media ever since. So today I have George Kouros, and I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about himself. Many of you probably already know who he is, but just in case you don't, I'm going to let him fill you in. So, hey, George.
Well, hey, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate your time. And it's nice. I spent a lot of time in Texas, and it's funny because I'm often asked, like, what's one of the more innovative states that you've gone to? And when I'm outside of Texas, I always point to Texas, and people are like, really? I said, no, they're doing some pretty good stuff there. Yeah, and it's just really amazing, the schools there, and focus, and just continuously trying to get better. And I think the districts of innovation initiative they actually had in the state, it's interesting because when I was when Innovators Mindset came out, the districts of innovation initiative in the state actually started right around the same time. So a bunch of people had to put money towards professional learning, and they were like, here's this book on innovation. So
that's great.
Yeah. So like, probably, yeah. So it's interesting too. It wasn't, I was really smart and knew what was going on. It was like, it just was good timing. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people I know in the state of Texas that are really pushing the boundaries in the work that they're doing. So really, really special place to my heart. One of my favorite, nicest people I've ever met in my life are Texas. You go out of your way to be polite. So that is legitimately not something I just say, you know. It's not like if you were from a different state, I would say, oh, this state.
Right.
Pulling the blood. Yeah. So, yeah, just really, really, as I just, I've always been really felt welcome there. So just really appreciate it. So I actually am from Canada. I grew up there, grew up in a very small town, about 5,000 people, a little bit bigger now. It's funny because there's a lot of people that have gone on to do pretty amazing things from that little small town. Like one of the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche, who won the Stanley Cup. And I don't know how many people know what that is in the U.S. right now. Not as big a hockey culture here. It's actually someone who I grew up with, and, you know, Olympians. And so I joke with my wife that excellence breeds excellence.
Yeah.
I say that all the time. Like, I'll say like, oh, do you know that person's from Humboldt? And she's like, really? So yeah, I grew up in this really small town. But you know, I traveled around, and the last 2 years, my family and I, we've been in Florida. And the thing that I think really kind of drives me is I grew up in a small town, really loved the community, really grew up with a really good set of friends, which I still am friends with to this day. I think a lot of times people kind of move on from who they grew up with in those small towns, but we're still very close and very, I would say, like, very supportive yet competitive friend group, right? That's kind of what we're doing. But you felt like when you're living in a small town that you were not afforded the same opportunities that if you were to, for example, live in a city. And I think one of the things that really drives me is, do we actually create that really that community connection, but also ensure that if you live in a smaller area that maybe doesn't have the same access to, you know, learning opportunities. For example, I always use this example. If I want to play violin when I was a kid, I'd have to drive an hour and a half one way, right? Now, if I want to learn to play violin, I can go on YouTube. So it is actually like, how do we actually ensure that no matter where you live, you have access to incredible opportunities to grow? So I think that's a lot of the driver of my work today, is really kind of making sure that you build those connections, really appreciate where you are, but you're not limited because of where you are.
I love that. You know, a couple things resonated with me and what you just shared about your background. One, about the not as pervasive a hockey culture, but I shared with you that I grew up in Boston.
All right. There you go.
So my mom was a hockey cheerleader in high school, and she was one of those cheerleaders that actually did their cheers on ice. So she was a figure skater / hockey cheerleader. And we lived in California for 1 year in 1970, 71. Anyway, it was the year the Bruins won the Stanley Cup, and Bobby Orr did that diving picture that everybody caught. That's, you know, so quintessential Boston Bruins and hockey and all that. So she was an avid hockey fan. So it wasn't my dad, it was my mom who loved hockey. So I grew up around hockey. But I love you talking about your friendships. and how you're friends, but you're also competitive. And when I got out of education, being a principal, to working, supporting through various organizations, I coined the term cooperative competition, which maybe sounded a little oxymoronic, but the idea is we have to be somewhat competitive, but we can do so in a collaborative, cooperative way. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but.
Oh, yeah. Weirdly enough, I actually wrote about a similar term, competitive collaboration in innovators' mindset, that the idea of like, and I use this analogy when I'm working in groups. I often say, you know, like, who wants to be the weakest person in this room? And nobody puts their hand up. And then I always joke. I'm like, well, somebody is, you know, and nobody wants to be that person. But sometimes when we don't know what's going on in other organizations, when we don't know what's going on across the hallway, it's an easy way to kind of fall back. So I think that, you know, the terminology that you utilize there, it is the focus of, do we both push and support? So if you're doing an incredible thing in your school, your organization, and it bugs me a little bit because I feel like I'm falling behind, can I like come over to you and ask for help and say like, hey, like, how are you doing that? Like, explain that to me. I think there is a time where, and you know, I kind of like, it's like I kind of span generations. Like, I don't know if I'm like, I am I what, Gen Z? I don't know what I am. I'm like, I'm someone who like didn't grow up with the internet, but also learned to use it when I was young, right? So it kind of hit that. So I know there's a kind of a gap there, but there is kind of a mentality that we wouldn't share trade secrets in education because that's what our school does, right? And we don't want to like give you that because then. But it's kind of, to me, is that idea that we share these things and it's never going to make you look bad, right? And if you're really about helping students, you want to help students whether they go to your school or not, right? And I think that's the focus for me.
Yeah, I love that. So you have said that innovation is not a skill, but a mindset.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about what you mean by that.
Yeah. So when I wrote Innovator's Mindset, a lot of people still talk about it and they share it. I don't know if they really, embrace it. They talk about growth mindset, Carol Dweck's work. And I think it's actually what I've shared is that, I think that is a really important mentality to have, but I also don't think it's enough in a time where we have access to all the information in the world. We have access to all the people in the world. So how do we take ideas and then create something of our own through that process? So like even me taking the idea of growth mindset and saying like, I want to go further than this and actually develop the idea of the innovator's mindset and how I articulate this, it's actually kind of basically what do you do with the information that you find? It's not just about having a willingness to learn, but actually a willingness to create and develop ideas because of it. So, you know, you're in Texas, I'm in Florida, I was in Canada, you know, we've worked in very different communities. So I see a really great idea and I'm like, that's awesome, but it doesn't necessarily work for our community. So instead of saying like, well, doesn't work for community, too bad. So how do I actually take that idea, create something with it, modify it, adapt it to really serve our community? And so when I talk about innovation, it's either iteration or invention, right? So it's taking something that kind of exists, tweaking it, changing it, altering it to fit the needs of those you serve, or actually, you know, creating something because it doesn't exist and actually kind of focus on that. But it's not just about doing new things. It's about creating new opportunities that are better than the ones that you had before. Because I think a lot of schools right now, they're really jumping on to new stuff, but it's not necessarily better. And do we actually take that step back and, you know, say like, is this actually serving our kids? And I'll give you an example. I wrote in the book, we wanted kids to eat healthier, right? And that was like a big focus. So we see all these vending machines with junk food, really unhealthy food. And so what did a lot of schools do? They actually took those vending machines and they said, hey, you know, instead of like a bag of chips, let's actually add celery in there instead.
Right.
And the kids are like, no, I'm not paying it. I'm not celery out of vending machine.
Right.
So instead of that, and so the intent was really, really good, was to actually really kind of think about how do we get kids to eat healthier, but just changing the food doesn't do that. Right. So these kids would actually, you know, walk, they're like, I'm not doing this. They'd walk to 7-Eleven, you know, it's like a block away. So now I gotta like fuel up. So I'm going to, instead of getting the big gulp, I'm getting the super big gulp and like a giant bag of chips and all those other things. So it was almost, you're almost pushing kids to eat unhealthier, right? To do this. What we should have focused on is really kind of like, how do we actually change attitudes towards eating? Like, what are some of the things that we're focusing on? And not focusing on deficits, but actually, you know, you and I were talking about the podcast. I don't really focus on, you know, I've lost a lot of weight over the last couple of years. I don't really focus on calorie deficit because it's like, it's just a hard thing to do. I actually focus on hitting a certain amount of protein every day. So it's easier to like achieve something than to like rob yourself of something. So it's just little things like that. And I think there's things in education that we're seeing that we're like, okay, we've done this new thing. Are kids better off? Are we asking that question? Is what we're doing improving or is it getting worse? And so I think that to me is a really crucial aspect of what we do in education. It's kind of like, you know, it's not that we shouldn't try new things, but we also have to kind of assess, is this actually benefiting our kids? And the other part of this too, and I think this is really important to say, a lot of people think that I'm all about new. It's all about new. And I really believe there's practices that were done hundreds of years ago that are still beneficial today. So one of the things I know you saw me speak, I talked about the idea of storytelling, right? And really, how do you get ideas to connect with people? Storytelling is the oldest teaching practice known in history. So it's not getting rid of the old for the new. It's addressing, is what we're doing working no matter the generation? So I think it's kind of altering that. And, you know, storytelling, even there's an innovation there. The way people tell stories on TikTok, the way people tell stories in video, there's different ways we can tell stories, but the practice is still the same. But the innovation is the iteration of how we can do it in totally different ways that we couldn't do, you know, 10, 1500 years ago.
You're making me think of when I taught back in my hometown of Bedford, Massachusetts. You and I were talking before the podcast about that. And I was a third and fourth grade teacher. I had a multi-age classroom. But every year, the kids put on a play. And we would write the play, and we would build all of our curriculum around that play. So it was very thematic. It became a huge community event. But along the lines of what you're saying, even back then, before the internet, the one year we did Once Upon a Time. And what we focused on was all the different ways that you can tell a story. You can tell a story through comics. You can tell a story through movies. You can tell a story through song and so forth, as children's books, whatever it was. And that made up our vignettes that we created to tell the story of Once Upon a Time. And so I just think if we were to do another version of that, all the different ways you mentioned TikTok and other ways in which we tell stories now. I really appreciate that. I want to hear from you, though, about that classroom teacher. So because you also talk about the fact, and I've always subscribed to this, that children are born curious, right?
Yeah.
And somehow unintentionally, I believe, we squelch a lot of that curiosity out of them.
Right.
And so the role of the teacher, I want to start there with the role of the teacher and helping to foster that innovative mindset.
Yeah. And you make a really good point. If you think about this, like, we don't have to really coax kindergarten kids to draw, right? But then when we start grading it immediately, then they're like, well, okay, now I need a thing. I need something to like tell me if I'm doing a good job or whatever. And so there's a lot of learning tasks that actually we start like giving little stickers to, giving this to, and then it's not about the learning, it's about getting the gift at the end, right? And one of the biggest challenges that I hear from a lot of high school teachers is when I try to do something really innovative, when I try to do something that is not what is the usual experience for many of our kids, they're like, just give me the test. Like, just don't make me think. And you know, that actually happens because we are conditioned to this. And so I think it's really easy to say like, oh, this is the teacher's fault to create this. But then you see, I work with a lot of school districts and they're like, yeah, just focus on learning, focus on building relationships. Really, we want kids to be deep thinkers, but also here's our test results. We're totally data-driven. Everything's about the test. And so one of my mentors, Kelly Wilkin, she said, you know, the way we assess drives our teaching, not the other way around. So if you constantly talk about test scores and then don't complain when teachers teach the test, right? Because they're like, this is how you value things. So that's what actually ends up happening. So I think part of it too is, do we create spaces where we understand there's curriculum constraints, there's testing restraints, but innovating inside the box and kind of thinking about, okay, so we do have to deal with this. So one of the examples I often use is, let's say you have a kid who we're trying to teach a science concept, and we're teaching the science kids concept, but I know this kid wants to become a YouTuber, right? And maybe not really interested in science, but I know they want to be a YouTuber. Could I actually get the kid to create a video explaining the concept of science? And Adam Grant just wrote about this in Hidden Potential, and something I've been saying forever, is that when you actually have the ability to teach a concept, then you actually have a way better understanding of it. So now, giving the kid the opportunity to explain the concept to others, will that kid actually understand it in a deeper level? So, because a lot of people say to me, well, they still got to get tested on it. Yeah, they are going to get tested on it, but they're going to know it way better than, you know, me just kind of saying it to you, you regurgitating it back to me, them having to explain it. And so there's a lot of research that, you know, kind of getting kids to create this. So I'm not saying don't worry about the test. It's a super easy thing for people to say outside of organizations and then walk away, and then the organization is still responsible for the test. But how do you innovate inside those constraints and actually kind of understand this? And one of the things that we can do, and I'm guilty of this huge, especially in as a classroom teacher, is we want to jump in really quick. We see a kid struggling, we want to jump in and do it for them. Struggle is not a bad thing, right? And it actually is something that you learn through that process. How do you actually get a kid so that you're like, you know, I remember one group of students I had in a math class, I actually posed them. I said, look, I know you know all this stuff. So here's some stuff it's a couple grade levels higher, figured out. They're like, well, we don't want to do it. I'm like, well, it's not my problem. I don't have to teach it. So see if you can figure it out. And they could not believe that I wouldn't just tell them. They couldn't handle it. And then they like struggled with it, had a really hard time, figured it out. And they were so excited about the process, right? So excited about the learning. And then they're like, oh, we see what you did. We see what you did there. And they figured it out. And I'm like, that's why I wouldn't jump in, right? Because I wanted them to struggle. I wanted to, you know, and I think it's really having those high expectations. And the most important thing we can teach in our schools is to teach people how to learn. Like, that is the most important thing. Like, what do you do when we're not there? What do you do when a teacher is not present? How do you figure out your own pathway forward? So I think it's really kind of, you know, as a teacher, picking and choosing those times when you don't jump in, because it's like really easy to do that, because we don't want to see kids struggle. We don't want to see kids fail. Like, I know this as a parent too, like, it's not just a teacher, but sometimes when you jump in on everything, you're actually, it feels good to you now. It hurts the kid long-term.
It is such a great temptation, and one that's easier said than done resisting,
right?
You know, and I'm thinking, you talked about innovating inside the box. So let's just focus right now on a school, and you've got the principal kind of as the leader of that box, that school building. Yep. And I was mentioning to you that situation where I put on the plays every year with my students and so forth. Yep. I didn't come to that school and say, hey, I'm going to do this. My principal knew my skill set, came to me and said, Kevin, this is what I want you to do. Came, built a stage in the classroom because he knew what that would do for kids and so forth. He knew my skill set, and it just flourished. It just grew year after year. But again, he saw a skill in one of his teachers, and he brought that out. So he really was instrumental in building my skill set as an innovative teacher. I don't think I could have done that in a different environment without a principal like that. So I want to hear from you a little bit more about that role of principal, because I know you've written about this as well. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm going to show you. So Allison Apsey and I wrote the book, What Makes a Great Principal. And it's kind of like an ode to, it starts off as an ode to a principal I had, honestly, that saved my career. Her name was Kelly Wilkins. And same thing that you talk about. She brought out strengths in me. She didn't try to make me into something I wasn't. She actually, saw things that I could do and brought them to the forefront. Really, what was interesting was how I got hired in the first place. I remember I applied to her school, and it was a grade 5 to 9 teacher. Like, that was all that was said, right? And it didn't say like grade 6 science, didn't say grade 8 language arts. It said grade 5 to 9 teacher. So you're going to get a wide pool of people applying for that, because, you know, you probably don't really know. And, you know, some people might not have applied for it because they're like, well, I want to teach only this. And if it's not this, then I have no interest in that. And you and I were kind of joking around. This is at a time where it was hard to get a job.
Right. Right.
So it wasn't now.
Right.
So, she hired, or I went to the interview and it was like very conversational. And she basically, the reason why she listed as a grade 5 to 9 position, her mentality was, let's find the best people and see if we can fit jobs around them within our school. Are they like, is there something they bring to the table that we don't purposely have? Right. Yeah. Like maybe we have a grade 7 math teacher that's leaving. We have actually, maybe we have someone in our own community that wants to teach grade 7 math. And is there something there? So she saw things that I had that the school didn't have that she thought would complement. And then she, you know, she could kind of figure out the teaching load on what I was actually doing. So I didn't get her immediate response about getting hired because she was like kind of playing this game of chess. It's like, okay, so if I move this piece here, is there room for him? Right. So really kind of put him in a situation where you build on strengths. And a lot of times in education, and this is done at the admin level to the teacher level, we focus on what people can't do. And you don't ever become innovative. You don't actually really excel by constantly hearing about what you're not good at, right? And so Kelly's focus, and I think really has kind of been something that's really pushed me, is looking at what is the person really good at? How do we tap into that? And kind of going back to the example of the kid who wants to become a YouTuber that maybe doesn't like science, but can I actually develop that strength where through that strength, they actually develop their weakness in science, right? And so that is a mentality in that space too. So I think that your principal did similar things to what my principal did, is really looked at what is this person good at, and did it before I even walked in the door, right? And saying, it's not about getting the best grade 7 teacher or grade 7 science teacher. It's about getting the best person for a school. So it wasn't, and I would not say that I was the best teacher out there and that's what I got hired, but she felt that I was the best fit, mm-hmm. if that made sense.
It makes
great sense. For the school.
Yep.
Right. And so I think that's where, you know, cause I don't want to say I was the best teacher hired, cause I'm sure there's way better teachers in that pool, but she just saw some of the skill sets I have. And, you know, you and I talked quite a bit about sports before. Probably my favorite coach of all time is Phil Jackson. Mm-hmm. And Phil Jackson, you know, is known for having these really great players, Michael Jordan, Kobe, Shaq, and winning all these championships. But what he's really not known for, which is his real gift, is basically every person on that team knew they had a role to the success of the team. And that's part of what we do in education, is do we actually ensure that no matter what you do in school, you see you contribute to the overall success of the community. And that's, you know, those pieces were really, really there, kind of set up. And that's why the principal position, I think, is really important. If I ask someone, say like, hey, how's your principal? And they're like, oh, they're really nice. That's like a red flag big right. time. And I was like, okay. But are they making you better? Like, do they make you better? Or just like, you just do whatever you want and they don't really care. That's that, you know, as long as you don't get in trouble, you don't hear from them. So I think that to me is really great leaders bring out the best in people. Yep. And there's a balance of autonomy and challenge, right? They want to push you a little bit too. So I know a lot of people in my travels have left schools because they felt they weren't being challenged anymore, that they were not growing.
Right.
Because the leader is just kind of like, you just do whatever. And they're like, nah, I actually want to be really, really good. And, you know, I crave coaching. I crave becoming better. So.
Well, you talked about the temptation of a teacher to sweep in and kind of save the child, right? And do it for them so they don't have to experience the struggle. Same thing for principal. I can remember vividly one situation in particular, a fifth grade teacher came to me and said, first of all, the statement was, Kevin, you know, these kids are not motivated. So first thing I had to do was correct these and adjust that to our. Because if we're looking at our students as these, as opposed to our, that's problem one. The next piece though is, kind of out of my Covey trainings through the years, the only thing over which we have any control is our own actions and our own behavior. Yep. And even that's a challenge in and of itself. Right. So right. I had to flip it. I had to say, so what are you doing to motivate? Because what the teacher wanted was for me to wave a magic wand and fix it, create this more motivated student in our classroom. And I couldn't do that, even if I wanted to do that. So I said, what are you going to do? What are you going to change? And again, that was part of causing her to have to struggle to work through that.
Yeah,
she did.
Yeah,
but it's not the answer she was looking for.
Right. Yeah, and that is a lot of times we create cultures and stuff. You know, like I talk about. I know there's a lot of discipline stuff that's going on in schools too. And of course we want to make sure we're supporting our teachers if there's like severe behavioral. Some of the stuff I'm saying is like, how is this not being dealt with? But that's a whole other conversation because I was a very lovable principal. Yeah. Also, you didn't mess with me.
Right.
that was something people knew. Like, do not like, he'll support you. But first of all, don't lie to him. Tell him if you messed up, own it.
Right.
And then, you know, life will be a lot easier for you, but you have to take responsibility. But sometimes we have little moments, little incidents that are really kind of insignificant. It's just like dump them to the principal, right? Because that's the mentality that we have. And does that actually build a relationship with the student where they actually see you as someone to be respected? Or is it like, well, they can't even handle me and I'm 10, right? Like I was a kid that I could get under your nerves. And if I knew I could, it was like jaws smelling blood in the water. Right. And so and there are kids like that. That's a thing. And like I said, huge behavioral issues, like these massive behavioral issues that you're seeing in school where principals are like dumping them back on teachers. That's like a concern for me with the principal. Like, do you not know how to deal with this? Like, do you not, you know, how to support this person? And, you know, kind of doing that. So we want to make sure that our teachers kind of knew that they were supported in their decisions. And if they're having a rough day and they're like, listen, I know I can deal with this day, I just don't have the capacity to do it. Like, hey, I got you. Like, we all need support in different ways in different times. But that's something that we really wanted to teach our kids too. And, you know, as a principal, one of the things for discipline, I used to have principals and maybe I'm dating myself that used to like scream and yell at me. And I'm just like, shut up. Like in my head, like that's what I'm thinking, right? It's like, whatever. I really care what you're saying. And you kind of lose. You just kind of like, whatever, right? And you just kind of ignore them. You're like, okay, let's get through this yelling session. That was like the old school mentality. As a principal, when kids are sent to my office, and I would know 99% of the time what had happened, I would say to them, hey, why are you here?
Right.
And I would just say that because now they got to focus on what they're saying, not what I'm saying, right? So sometimes they would wait a little bit. I'm like, I'm going to wait until you tell me. So you're going to own it. And what the beautiful about that strategy is you typically know what's going on based on like what a teacher communicates or another student, but they don't know what you know. And so sometimes they're like, this happened this time. You're like, oh my God, this is way worse. Right.
Right.
And so they would kind of go through this. And then I would actually say to the student, okay, so after they tell me this, what would you do if you're me? Right. And they would always be way worse on themselves than I would have ever been. Right. So now they're taking ownership over the action. And then we say, okay, beautiful. I appreciate that you're taking advantage. That's what we're going to do. Let's just call home so that your family knows what's going on. Hey, I just wanted you to know I'm with Billy right now. Billy messed up, but just don't get too hard on them because we all mess up as kids. Like if we, you know, we all struggled. So like I made sure that parent knew, but Billy is going to tell you what happened and what's going to be the consequence. So just pass the phone over. Kid knows I know what they said, what they agreed to. They can't get away with some lie after school. And then I would like reassure like, hey, I really appreciate your kid taking responsibility for what happened. I really appreciate that they set up their own consequence. This is what they're doing. So they can't say, well, why would you do that? I didn't do it. Your kid said this is the consequence. So it's partly not just, you know, kind of making sure that there's consequences for our actions. You're teaching the kid to take responsibility for their actions, which is a long-term step to success. So that was the mentality of that. And there's a lot of times where that was 99% of times of how I did my discipline, and kids would be bawling walking out of my classrooms or out of the office, and teacher's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I didn't say anything. The kid just realized how bad they messed up. Right. So like, I didn't have to yell. I didn't have to do anything. So I know this sounds horrible. I wanted them to feel bad. I wanted them to like, go like, ugh, like screwed up really bad. And I remember one time a teacher came in and said, oh, what's wrong? I'm like, no, let him cry. Let him cry. We want them to feel bad. No, when you screw up, it's okay to feel bad
because
you don't want that feeling again. You don't want to feel bad. So that is not likely repeated, right? So you're really trying to get the kid to take responsibility, kind of do this, bringing the family in. but creating a space where they can't, like, oh, that's too harsh. I didn't say it. Your kid did. Your kid actually decided this consequence, right? And that's what they did. I appreciate them taking responsibility because that's a huge skill that we want to develop in them right now and in the future. So, like, I never really had parents challenging me, saying, like, you're too mean, blah, 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 because I never did it. Like, I let the kid do that too, right? Now, of course, there's that's not 100% effective, but it was, like, 98. Like, it was pretty high. And but that's, we wanted to bring the families in. We wanted kids taking responsibility for what they had done and making it right. And that to me is a really important life skill that we're developing our kids, that, you know, if you don't do that, then they come off a little entitled. Like, I, you know, I can do whatever I want. You're going to have to deal with it. I'm like, that's not how it works. I mean, maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm just an old guy. That's not how it works in my
life. You're making me, kind of go over in my mind certain disciplinary situations that I dealt with as a principal. And there are some that I dealt with incredibly well. And then there are others, as I'm listening to, I'm like, I wish I could have a do-over because I might handle that one a little bit differently. Yeah. Well, what I like to do, I know you do podcasts as well, and I notice you keep yours relatively short. So I want to be respectful of our listeners, viewers. And I do want to touch on something real quick before we round it out. And that is your personal fitness journey. And I know it's like, why the heck are you talking about that? We're talking about education right now. Right. But I think there's some connections here. I think even in what you were just talking about with regards to discipline and really having that lesson. Yeah. So do you mind touching on that some? Because I'm sure there are folks out there following you on social media as I am. And I've been really impressed with your journey. Right. So talk to us a little bit about that and how it impacts your work.
Oh, and I told 100% they're connected, right? And I think a lot of times we don't really credit how much physical health and mental health and emotional health are all interconnected. That, you know, a lot of my insecurities mentally, emotionally, were really stuff I was struggling with physically. And I was telling you before, basically, I just kind of let weight creep up. I got to like about 320 pounds. And during COVID, I saw the number one comorbidity with, you know, death of getting COVID was obesity. So being a dad, thinking like I need to be here for my kids. I got to get this figured out. And the driver for me to lose weight prior to that was I want to look good, which is like, you know, it wasn't, right. You know, yeah. Like everyone wants to look good, I right. guess, but it wasn't like, but you know, being there for your kids when they graduate school and further major life events, that's a bigger driver for me. Mm-hmm. And if by, you know, if like byproduct, I look good through the process, great. But that's not that wasn't the driver. So I really started to focus on that. And even this morning, like, you know, like I told you, like, here's when I'm available. Cause I very explicitly make sure I have time every day to like exercise, get a sweat on. We just kind of experienced the kind of like the outer cone of Hurricane Milton here. And I didn't have my normal routine yesterday. And I don't know, like, it was like a weird day for me. Cause I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm just struggling a little bit cause I need to sweat to like get, you know, brain. I feel like I deal with things a lot better through that process. So just kind of like going through that, you know, having that discipline and taking care of myself, I would actually feel that I've become a better learner through the process. I went, you know, and really, I've become better at my job, and I've learned to kind of separate these things. Like, hey, this is, and one of the pieces of advice I always give to people is that if you would commit to meeting your superintendent or your principal, and you're like, hey, if you're going to say you're going to be there at 8:30 a.m., then would you be there at 8:40 or would you be there like 8:28? Like, would you be there at 8:30? Right. So you will commit to this. But then if you say you're going to go to the gym at 5:30, do you kind of go at 6? Do you maybe skip it? So a lot of times what we do is we commit to other people, but we don't commit to ourselves. And I actually really encourage people, listen, if you have committed to this time, and unless it's like life or death and someone says, hey, I would like to meet you this time, actually, I have an appointment then. Like, you don't have to tell them what it is. You maintain that because that actually will serve you better. And you can deal with this as well. When I was a principal, funny, I used to teach spin in the morning before. And one of the things I learned through that process is it's way easier to work out when other people are dependent on you. Like, I never like decided, should I go? Cause I had to, I was the instructor. And then I would yell at people for like a solid hour, just yell at them and like get on their case and stuff like that. And they like loved that. It was kind of, you know, kind of that funny thing. And then when I got to school, I was the most chill principal ever. I was like, all my negative energy was out. It was out in the morning. I had a good sweat. So I do think they are coinciding. So anyone listening to this, I really think if you want to, a lot of times we give our health up to do the job, but eventually you won't be able to do the job. Whereas if you actually take care of your health, you'll be better able to serve others. And serving yourself is really in service of others. So that to me is, that connection is really, really powerful and important to the work that I do.
That's so powerful. Well, George, the way I like to end these podcasts is, since the title of it is Just Thinking, I want to ask you, is there anything else about which you're just thinking that you didn't get a chance to address during this episode?
Yeah, like and it's funny because most of my thinking, I run quite a bit, and most of my blog posts, most of my podcast ideas for solo episodes come from taking that time just to kind of be on my own, running, you know, really clears your mind. A lot of things that, you know, you're seeing in education right now really focus on artificial intelligence. I think there's some real opportunities there. But my concern with some of this is that we're doing everything to replace ourselves. There's a really interesting, I know this is going to make me sound like I'm 12 years old. There's a really interesting South Park episode. Okay. So it's horrible to start this. Yep. And the kids find ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And what they do, they actually start getting their ChatGPT to write all their essays. And the essays become much more complex,
right?
Much more powerful. The teacher, Mr. Garrison, is frustrated because the amount of time he's assessing these essays has gone up exponentially because they're just much more complicated than what he's used to. So he goes home to his partner and he says, like, these kids, they're killing me because they're writing these essays and they're so good. And then the partner says, have you heard of ChatGPT? And he's like, no. He's like, yeah, you should get that to assess the essays. So he doesn't say the kids are using it. He's like, yeah, this will probably help you. So basically you have these kids writing these essays using ChatGPT. You have the teacher using artificial intelligence to assess them, and basically no one's doing anything and it's not really kind of growing. So I think that one of the things I talk about is Dan Pink's drive. It talks about motivation. Like, you know, when you give awards, and we started off talking about curiosity, when you give awards for learning, all of a sudden the focus goes off, shifts away from the learning to the award. And so he says, like, really, you got to kind of find that purpose in the process. But awards are really good for, and I don't remember if he says in the book, but this is kind of my interpretation, for like mowing the lawn, right? Stuff you don't need to think about. So when we're using, for example, artificial intelligence, are we actually taking away critical thinking, or are we using that for the lawnmower activities? So that's some of the things that I really want to use this to deepen my learning, not to replace it, to deepen my thinking, not to replace it. So that's probably one of the big things that because it's really easy, and I've seen it, where we jump on something, we create a mess, and then we spend a lot of our time fixing the mess, as opposed to like, hey, like, I know the world is going really fast. Let's kind of be thoughtful about how we approach these things to actually make school and learning better, to set up our kids, you know, in a really thoughtful way.
I was looking at a note, so I apologize for looking away while you were saying that, because I sat in on a podcast yesterday about human intelligence, and there's this big HI movement, and the main focus of it, the mission of the HI movement, is to ensure that all students have all the skills they need to thrive and succeed in an AI world.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, to me, and it's funny, like, this every year I commit to trying something, to learning something new. So like this year, my daughter is 8 years old, mm-hmm. and, she's like, loves musicals. And I bought her a piano for Christmas, and I bought her a piano, and both her and I'm 49 years old and she's 8, and I'm learning right alongside of her. And kind of like talking about the competition thing, I'll get really good at song. She like wants to crush me. She wants to be better at it. And same thing. I'm like, how's this 8-year-old better at me in this song? So we push each other. So it's really powerful because she sees her dad later in life taking up something for the very first time alongside of her. So she can't be like, well, you've never done it. Well, yeah, I have. I'm actually doing it with you right now. So that, to me, is something that, you know, like, for 1 year, it's really about my fitness and really kind of focusing on developing that area. So I always try to push myself in different opportunities for learning, because I know long-term that's going to benefit me more than just kind of, well, you know, I can make music with AI. Like, yeah, you can, but it doesn't mean you understand any of it.
I love that. Well, that's an awesome note on which to end. So thank you for thinking with me today, George. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks.
See ya.